You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS, Radio Waterloo, 102.7, 946 on the Rogers Digital Network. You can find us at...
Welcome to CKMS Community Connections. This is the Monday edition, and I'm Yenny. Usually, this program is spearheaded by Bob Jonkman. Today, we're speaking with Leslie Crompton, and she's with the Waterloo Region Social Development Center, and she also works on the Unsheltered campaign. This is at CKMS 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. You can find us online at www.radiowaterloo.ca. And we are in Kitchener, Waterloo area here in Ontario, Canada. And with me on the line is Leslie Crompton, and she is with the Social Development Center Waterloo Region, and she works on a campaign called the Unsheltered Campaign, and we've spoken with her in the past, and now she's with us again. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Yenny. I'm happy. Well, I guess I'm happy to be back. Though, you know, we are now a year into the Unsheltered campaign, and we're still going strong, and the need for both the advocacy and the direct supports that we provide in collaboration with a number of community groups are very much still needed and continue to be needed. I don't actually see this letting up anytime soon. You know, when I talk about advocacy, this campaign really started as a result of the gaps that we saw in the shelter system and such for the homeless when we first went into COVID. And while significant gains have been made in Waterloo Region over the past year by the region, by the agencies, for the homeless community, or the potentially precariously housed, we still have a long way to go. Where we've been focusing in our advocacy over the last few months has really been on the inequities between the genders and the age groups within the homelessness. A lot of focus is given to the men. And you can see that with the fact that in Kitchener alone, we have the House of Friendship up at Waterloo Inn, which is housing 115, and there's an overflow at St. Mark's, which can house, which is run by the Y, and can house 60. And St. Mark's is a low barrier. It's just an afternoon overnight one for the winter. Whereas the options for women, they've got one option in Kitchener. They have the Y's emergency shelter, formerly known as Mary's Place, or continues to be known as Mary's Place. And what we found is, you know, there's really a lack of options. There's no overflow for the women. While the Y indicates that they will put them into a motel, there's still a lot of hesitation for women to actually go to the Y for a variety of reasons. And what we started to see in December, and what we were a lot of women sleeping out cold, rough still, whereas the men were accessing St. Mark's, if nothing else. And you may remember there was a death at the shelter. There was a death in December at the St. John's Soup Kitchen of an older woman. And this was someone who had actually been trying to get into the shelters. She'd actually tried to get in, except she had dogs. With the dogs, again, she was turned away. What we would have expected is she could have had a dog-friendly motel room. If the overflow is supposed to be to motel for women, you know, we'd be looking at that type of thing. Because we know that, any worker in the field will tell you that these individuals are very dependent on their animals. Yeah. It's a lifeline. But we're finding that the shelter system does not acknowledge or respond to the unique requirements of women and LGBTQ2S residents. They need more consideration in terms of safety from the elements, from men, from human sex traffickers, and human traffickers. It's a different group, and it really has to be looked at a different way and really explored as to why they're not accessing the what. And there are many reasons for that. Another group that is underserved is couples. And couples, no age. So while the Y has rooms set aside, a few rooms set aside for couples, none of the agencies have the mandate for couples, which means when those rooms at the Y are full, there is no option to overflow to motels, because there's no funding from the region on that, for the most part. There are a few opportunities, and I was working with a couple recently where they had tried to go into the shelter system again. They had been told, oh, yeah, we can keep you guys together. However, when they showed up, they were told that they had to spend two nights on the standard floor. So that's where it's cots and things like that, separated. And the gentleman has major health issues, which would not allow him to actually be in that type of an environment. So they were trying, they had continued to just use their own money to pay motel bills, right, because they're not accessing the system. So if you try and stay in a motel, it runs you about $2,000 a month in this region at these motels. So they were consistently running out of money and having nowhere to turn. And this is not the first time that I have, been involved in this type of discussion, both with the region and the agencies. I know everyone is working hard to move these things forward. Ideal world, couples would be able to just bypass all of this and go back into an apartment, but that isn't necessarily happening.
It's really horrible. It's hard to hear all of those things and to know that there's so much discrimination going on, and especially right now as well, it's even more horrendous.
Yeah, and it's going to continue. And I think that the other thing that we are really concerned about is what is going to start happening when the eviction ban is lifted, which in theory will be this week, unless it's extended, because there are a lot of people in this region that are thousands of dollars in arrears.
Oh my God.
On their rent. And while there was an evictions ban, the tribunal, the Landlord-Tenant Board was still continuing its court procedure, shall we say, for the lack of a better word. I'm missing the actual word right now. They were still continuing. And that was actually at a disadvantage to the tenants. Because, again, they were all being done virtual. Tenants haven't necessarily been getting notice. They haven't had time or access to legal counsel or even to the technology to allow them to participate virtually. And so what is happening is the eviction process has still proceeded. And once the ban is lifted, the sheriffs are going to have a stack of eviction notices that they can act upon.
Hmm.
Right? And what that means is added pressures onto our shelter system.
Yeah.
And an already pressured housing market. And we do have some, you know, Luther Wood does have some money, extra money in the rent bank. But again, I think we're going to see significant impact if that continues. And then we're really going to have, you know, some interesting dynamics where you have people who have apartments who had been living on their own and for whatever reason weren't able to continue their rent. And we know for a lot of people on ODSP and assistance, it's already challenging. But we're going to see people that have historically had jobs and part-time jobs and things like that. And it's going to be a different dynamic going into the shelter. Right? Because, you know, so...
Wow.
It's just when I think about it, you know, and I was just talking to a gentleman last week, where he's, you know, he's not going to St. Mark's for the overflow because of COVID, right? So he's bouncing around trying to leverage friends or finding a warm spot to sleep outside, which, as you can imagine right now, there's not a ton of warm spots.
Mm.
You know, 2 weeks ago, we were out doing our food outreach in Cambridge, and we had six gentlemen come out that were newly homeless, and they were not dressed for the weather.
Hmm.
And so, again, they, you know, there's that lack of understanding with the system, not wanting, you know, to go into the system. So we did the best we could in terms of providing them with clothing, blankets, obviously food. I provided the pocket cards that at least give them the information to get started as to who to phone. But this is going to continue to be an ongoing challenge. And I don't see it. You know, we normally think it'll become a lot easier in the nicer weather. If anything, we're just going to see more and more encampments.
Yeah.
The nicer weather. If we really want to be realistic, you know, we really need to get to more affordable housing quicker. The region has started two projects. They've got under rapid build funding. They've got six units. In Cambridge, six units is going to cost us $1.3 million. So we're going to house six people. And then they've got the Y has a significant, I think, 34 that are going up on block line. What we really, really need is thousands more than that of affordable housing. We reckon you probably need about 10,000 units ASAP. And the region has a strategic plan for 2,500 in 5 years. The 2,500 doesn't even cover the people that are on the current waiting list.
Mm.
Right? So we have to start looking at other strategies with all of this as well. Other supports that allow people to be successfully housed. Because as you can imagine, and we've started down the road, the University Avenue transitional dorms are a good start, where they're trying to prepare individuals to move out on their own again and give them the life skills that they may have forgotten. Or have never learned. And that's a bigger challenge than what most of us who grew up middle class or upper lower class, where we had strong family influences. You know, we know how to budget and all these different things. and know how to kind of do a lot of these things, and we don't necessarily have anxiety associated with looking for housing and things like that. So all our social resources, and you know, I do feel for the agencies that support the shelters and the transitional living. They are stretched. They are, you know, they're dealing with COVID. They're stretched with resources, staffing. They're having to bring in a lot of new staff. And this is just going to continue to be an ongoing challenge. I am happy to say that, you know, through ourselves and other community groups that are pure community groups, not purely funded volunteers, funded through other people in the community, we are feeding a lot of people, and we're really working to find them the alternatives for that type of thing. But I know, like, we take out over 50 meals twice a week. We start in Cambridge, and then depending on how many people come in Cambridge, we have other locations that we drop off. And these are not just homeless. These are people that are often sheltered, but very food insecure.
Yeah.
And when we think about food banks and things like that, which are great resources, and I have a lot of respect for what all of them do, and I work in conjunction with a number of them, but, you know, to put together a reasonably good meal, you need a lot of different ingredients. And so what we're finding is a lot of our sheltered people get the non-perishables, but not a lot of the perishables. So what will actually even happen is they will bring some of their, got one gentleman who collects perishables, canned things, brings them to us, and then we are able to turn them into meals. And meals not just for him and his group that he provides food to, but a broader group as well. He brought us a humongous can of pumpkin pie mix about a month ago, and we did about 138 tarts and 9 pies that all went back out into the community. Because we can access through other ways the perishables. And it also gives them a sense of community. One lady, we offer to, she takes about a 45 minute bus ride on Thursdays, one way to get to us. So I said to her, well, we could probably just drop by, like, given that you're in Cambridge, it'll probably be easy enough. We could just drop your food by. And her comment was, no, she likes to come out and have a bit of socializing.
Yeah.
Because we're outdoors, she can come and talk to us, and again, because that's another big piece that is missing for a lot of these individuals. And even just to be able to get around, we talk about rapid with our transit system, it's for emergencies only, or not for emergencies, for necessities. And for a lot of people, especially our older residents, they're uncomfortable going out any sort of distance. We've got other people who don't want to bring out young children and things like that. So they just survive on whatever is provided to them. I think a lot of people forget that not everybody can afford Instacart or whatever those food delivery services are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they are because I don't use them. right? And so it continues to be an issue. And I know that the food bank supplies are going down right now.
Yeah.
Demand is going up. Like I've seen over the last month or so, it is clear that is happening even with them. So I don't know if it's just a sort of a standard thing they see in the winter, but I do know that they are being challenged with mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
From that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's just a lot of not so good news.
Yeah, it isn't. Yeah, it's still going to be a rough few years. I think that, you know, the upside is there's a lot of people out there trying to do this and trying to help. So there's I'm hoping that there's a broader sense of community.
Yeah.
We need to keep building on that, and the message has to continue to get out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got great things like the community fridge in KW down by Full Circle, which is a wonderful initiative. I've talked with these guys. You know, we've engaged them, so we're trying to get something started in Cambridge. And it's great, and it's being used, but it's only as good as the people that for the people that can get to it. And we have a lot of people that are food insecure in the outerlying areas that can't easily access the downtown core,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm hoping, though, you know, with all the other community supports, you know, the issue then becomes, as we go along with this, is as we head back to if we ever head back to the new normal, where, you know, everybody gets back to work and things like that, are these community groups going to be able to keep going? And if not, what is going to be the impact of them folding? And that is a big concern.
Yeah.
Right? Because the number of meals that are going out through organizations like mine, or hampers that are going out and things like that, is fairly significant. And I'm not really, I'm fairly confident that the region and other organizations are not collecting any of that data.
Hmm.
So, you know, when the food bank says the needs are higher by 7%, I think was the quote last week, the needs are probably truly about 20% higher or 30% higher.
Mm-hmm.
The food bank is only commenting on the demands being made of it. It's not a measure of what's truly happening in the marketplace,
mm-hmm.
Because they don't know what the community groups are providing.
Right.
Right. You know, it's the same thing that the region does, has some stats on meals being prepared for homeless or low-income type things. But again, it's only what is being prepared by the agencies, not what is going out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so my concern is always, if those numbers start to get published and used as facts, they're not actually facts. The numbers are off by great percentages.
Yeah. So is anybody putting all of that information together as a complete kind of overall view of it, as opposed to the...
Not so far. You know, I have a good idea. Oh, I know what we're putting out. And I am pretty confident that one of the organizations that we collaborate with a lot has their information. So we could pull those two together. There's a couple of other community groups as well that I'm not as tapped into. So I'm not sure what type of data they're collecting.
Okay.
But they probably have at least a fairly good idea that we could collect it.
Yeah.
We haven't gone down quite that road yet, though we've talked about it, doing that.
Wow. So what's next now then?
what's next now? Well, we're going to continue doing all of this. We're going to continue our advocacy for homeless, precarity housed. Affordable housing is big on our list. And then we are also starting to explore further two things. One is guaranteed jobs and basic income. And they're actually two different components. But again, getting in on, you know, ultimately the proper resolution of all of this has to do with appropriate income.
Yeah.
For all. And really educating people on that. I think that a lot of people don't realize with affordable housing, as much as it will cost us to build and do subsidized housing as taxpayers, there are statistics that show that when you offset the cost of the housing with the reduction in cost of healthcare, policing, jails, crime, addiction, et cetera, that it's actually better for us to invest in housing.
Yeah.
To be proactive. Yes, it's upfront capital costs, which may seem easier than, you know, slowly, you know, increasing budgets every year for all these other services that are in place, or, you know, just letting our healthcare system degrade rather than sort of fixing that. And that the same thing comes with having a basic income, or what we call, or an alternative is guaranteed jobs. A lot of the people that we talk about that are on ODSP, that are on OW, even some of them that are living in shelters and getting their money, they still are providing services, needed services, back into the community. But they do them as volunteers, because they can't necessarily fit into a traditional job market. So they can't work at the Tim Hortons or work so many hours a week. So they volunteer. And so what happens is we have a lot of volunteer roles that are needed and should actually be paid roles. And these individuals provide so much back into the community, and you know, I have a lot of them that are doing variety of volunteer activities for me. And I hate to use the word volunteer, because it really downplays what they are doing, because they are really working, just not with a salary. And they come in and they do a lot of different needed roles. Sorry. And with the proper supports and courses and mechanisms, they can do even more.
Yeah.
But they do need stability in their housing.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that is one of them. One of the individuals from Fakori's. I know I'm talking a lot. I know you'll have to edit all this down. From Fakori's back in August, we've now got him signed up to do his DED, and he wants to, you know, eventually go to college and such. But he's couch surfing. Still doesn't have a place to be. So it's very hard to get moving forward when you're always wondering where you're going to sleep.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you're always moving your stuff from place to place. And, you know, even, you know, the system, you know, puts them at risk of, couch surfing puts them at risk, should they have previous jail experience, of breaking parole, because where they're sleeping might be somewhere that they shouldn't be in the conditions of their parole, for example. But it is very hard to get them to do those types of things. And they need supports to do them. And sometimes the support is just having that person that you feel accountable to. That's kind of just helping you, you know, get the trip. Like, there's a lot of steps. And I think when someone who has no housing, that itself is overwhelming.
Yeah.
So try and sit down and think of all the steps I need to do just to even go and do the quizzes to determine what I need to do to my GED is just too much.
Yeah.
So having individuals that can sit and talk and say, okay, step one, you need a transcript. Okay, let's do that. Right. And, you know, that is just some of the things that we're doing as well. We do a few small activities like that because as the Unsheltered Campaign and Social Development Center, we don't do a lot of direct support. The two other areas that we do direct support is income taxes. And so we do free income taxes for low-income individuals and families. And we do the electricity support program, which helps people get reductions in their electricity bills. But other than that, we're really focusing on sort of the advocacy and making sure that the voices of all these different marginalized groups are being heard.
Mm-hmm.
And we want their voices to be heard. We might be the key that opens the door, but we want them to walk through that door and speak.
Yeah. Oh, it's really important work what you're doing. And I mean, right now, especially, it's hard to fathom. And I was thinking, obviously, it's quieted down in KW as far as it seems like the student population are not present. Some of the international students are not here. Like, regarding the student housing that obviously has been built over the years, and also we were experiencing a boom before COVID, obviously. We had a lot of development because of some of the companies that have come to the region. So, like, do you see any chance of these being, in one way or another, facilitated more so towards low income?
Yeah, and I do think that that can occur, and I do believe in some cases it is occurring. Again, it is relationships with the landlords, openness of the landlords, willingness, you know, for the most part, especially international students, are a fairly responsible group of individuals that landlords tend to feel a little bit more comfortable with. We already know that landlords in general are often not comfortable with OWODSP individuals regardless. You know, and so never mind anybody who is struggling with addiction or coming off an addiction. So it's really those relationships. And I know that the region, I know that Lutherwood is working on those relationships. It's a question of how fast. The other challenge is accessibility to services. So individuals need to feel comfortable where they're living, and they need to be able to get to the services that they are used to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having access to transit or transit passes or tickets. So I think it is a good place to look. I think that there needs to be more strategy put in place by the region on doing this. I think the region and the agencies have done wonderful work because basically they've taken over two of the three locations of the Waterloo Co-op residents incorporation. I don't know if you know that particular organization on University Avenue and Phillip Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's a university co-op, and they basically, they've got the one building that's on University Avenue, 139 University Avenue, is the transitional housing now. So there's 80 individuals there, and that's being managed by the Working Center. And so that's, and now the COVID homeless isolation unit is going to be on Phillip Street in one of their other buildings.
Oh, okay.
So the region and the agencies have really worked well with this particular organization.
That's great.
Which I'm very excited about because I'm very excited because I had already had that idea back in August. I lived there when I was in university, and it's a co-op. And if you go back to the roots of it, its philosophies are very much social justice related.
Oh, very good.
And it's co-op, and it's so it is definitely got the spirit, I guess. And when I talked to my university friends, they thought it was so wonderful because again, it's the spirit of what we believed in there fits so well with making some of these changes.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's all about getting out and educating people and building those relationships. I know that some individuals have managed to build relationships with landlords and get people into some of those student housing as well.
Okay.
But it really comes down to, again, what is the reputation? What are people's views? And how do we change people's views of somebody on ODSP and OW? Because, you know, to be quite blunt, a lot of those views that people take away are wrong. And it's, you know, you think about it, it's kind of the 80-20 rule that, you know, we always talk about in business. 80% of those people on ODSP and OW are probably fine as a tenant. Yeah, they might need some coaching and some additional help, but you know what? They're probably not going to destroy your place. And if you set them up for success, you'll get your rent. Yeah, you got 20 that, yeah, probably aren't going to be so great. And those 20 is what everybody thinks they're going to get.
Yeah.
Right? And it's unfortunate because, you know, I've spent the last year really engaging with a lot of individuals. Because I do, well, last 2 years actually, because of the tax clinics I do, majority of my clients are seniors that are on CPP and old age security, or they are people that are on OWOSD, ODSP. And, you know, I have had nothing but positive experiences with all of these individuals. I've had, I think, out of over 1,000 that I've dealt with, I've had 2 negative experiences.
Yeah.
Right. And very pleasant people, very smart. A lot of them are very aware of what's going on in the world, what's going on in our communities. You just got to take the time to get to know them. Right. And that's what I would say to any landlord that has a tenant, a building that had students and stuff. Take some time, figure out how to get to know some of these people. Because all, you know, a lot of them just want to know that they've got housing stability, right? And they want a safe place, safe, clean place to live.
Yeah. Well, wow, it's been very informative, all of the information that you've given here. I don't even really know where to go from here because it seems like very desperate times, but there are some things that we can do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, just continuing to be aware, continuing to educate yourself, continuing to advocate to the region, to our members of parliament. All levels of government really need federal and provincial governments taking much more of a stake in all of this. You know, I have spoken to a few of our MPs. We have some great ones that are very much in support of everything that we're doing. I think that we need to just continue to do all of that and to continue to be a solid community that finds ways to help others, and just to keep spreading that out there, is what we need to do. But really, you know, getting out there and letting everyone know what the changes need to be.
Mm-hmm. So where can people find your website and other online presence?
Okay, so we have The Unsheltered Campaign is on Facebook and Twitter, as well as the Social Development Center Waterloo Region is sdcwr.org. And you can find our information there on Facebook and on Twitter. And you can always just email us, too.
Very good. Well, thank you, Leslie, for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I always enjoy this time, and I'm always amazed at how much I can keep talking.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And it was all informative, too, so that's great.
Yep, and, you know, if anybody ever wants to have a chat, they can shoot an email to me at leslie@waterlooregion.org. And, you know, if they want to get involved or they just want to learn something else, you know, I'm there.
That's amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Monday edition of the CCC. I'm Yenny, and this is at 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Check us out online. We are always looking for more programmers. So if you have something you're really passionate about or music you like to play, CKMS offer all the training that you need to get you up and running. And we also do video podcasting, so that can be fun. Well, now everything is done from home, but in general, check us out.
This has been CKMS Community Connections, and my name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections is sponsored by Radio Waterloo and produced for CKMS FM Radio Waterloo in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. We're a community radio station with programming produced by the community, for the community, and about the community. You can read the show notes at radiowaterloo.ca/CCC, read the music list, hear past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast. Our executive producer is Yennefer Strong. Contributing producers are Jordan Dorans, Jeff Stager, and Dylan Bravener. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon, and also on Saturdays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m.
You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS. Radio Waterloo, 102.7, 9:46.